prácticamente monopolizan todo este mercado a nivel mundial, ¿no? Prácticamente todas las compañías de Internet son estadounidenses, ¿no? Hablamos de lo que decía antes, el GAFA, ¿no? El Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon. Esas grandes compañías ganan muchísimo dinero y una gran parte de sus ingresos, en concreto en redes sociales, en Facebook, que no tiene otra cosa que vender, son nuestros datos. O sea, eso es lo que hace que Facebook gane tanto dinero. ¿Cómo lo hace? Convirtiendo lo que tú vuelcas en la red en una serie de perfiles. Tú cuando subes una foto, cuando haces un comentario, cuando contestas a alguien a través de WhatsApp, que también pertenece a Facebook, o cuando subes una foto a través de Instagram, que también pertenece a Facebook, esos datos se cruzan y generan un perfil. Ese perfil, agregado a otros millones de perfiles, eso Facebook lo vende a compañías de publicidad para que los anuncios sean cada vez más relevantes y más, digamos, seleccionados para tus gustos, tus preferencias, tus miedos o tus fobias. Eso es una parte del negocio. Y la otra parte también es vender o comercializar esos datos con terceras compañías, pues para lo utilicen, desde compañías que hacen investigación de mercados hasta compañías como, pues en este caso, Cambridge Analytica, que hace pues análisis y consultoría política. Hay que decir que en este caso, además, el escándalo es que Facebook no vendió directamente esos datos a Cambridge Analytica, sino que esos datos fueron cedidos con una finalidad académica a un investigador de la Universidad de Cambridge, y este a su vez los cede o los vende, no queda muy claro ahí, a esta otra compañía que a su vez luego asesora a la campaña de Donald Trump. Pero esto es un caso que lo sabemos porque ha habido una investigación periodística de 5 años, ¿no? Este caso, ahora nos enteramos que Facebook sabía que Cambridge Analytica tenía esos datos porque lo ha tenido que confesar, lo ha confesado el propio Mark Zuckerberg ayer o antes de ayer. Pero si no llega a haber un trabajo periodístico de The Observer, The Guardian y New York Times, nunca hubiéramos sabido este pequeño ejemplo de lo que puede estar pasando.
Claro.
¿No? Es importante tener un ojo vigilante en este tipo de compañías tan opacas, por otro lado, pero no sabemos qué hacen con nuestros datos en realidad. O sea, ellos nos dicen, nos tenemos que fiar, ¿no? Porque no hay una regulación, no lo sabemos, no son transparentes en realidad. Porque se dedican a eso, a intentar y vender nuestros datos.
Sí, a eso quería ir, Pablo, fíjate, sobre regulaciones, ¿no? Porque evidentemente sobre Facebook, sobre cualquier red social, pareciera que no hubiese mayor control, evidenciando esta situación que se está generando. Ahora, ¿hay algún tipo de proyecto, de propuesta que genere regulación sobre el manejo de los datos que tienen estas redes sociales?
Como es un problema global, en Europa tenemos, digamos, la suerte de tener las legislaciones más duras de todo el mundo en materia de protección de datos, y aún así son insuficientes, claramente, pero porque esto es algo que avanza mucho más rápido que la ley, o sea, la vida, la técnica, la tecnología avanza más rápido que las leyes. Entonces, ahora va a entrar en vigor dentro de 2 meses un reglamento de aplicación para toda la Unión Europea que va a ser bastante duro en cuanto a sanciones para quien viole una serie de principios que protegen a los ciudadanos, de los datos de los ciudadanos. Que pero contrasta mucho con la ausencia prácticamente total de control que hay sobre protección de datos de los ciudadanos en Estados Unidos. Y estamos hablando de compañías que operan desde Estados Unidos. Es decir, estamos hablando de un mercado global. O sea, puede haber leyes y regulaciones locales que se pueden aplicar, pero realmente este mercado es global. Es muy, muy complicado aplicar una ley, una normativa global. Entonces, se generan desequilibrios gordísimos, ¿no? Aquí tuvimos una de las penúltimas, por un ejemplo, ¿no? Una de las penúltimas polémicas que existieron con las regulaciones europeas respecto de compañías estadounidenses, es algo que llamaban el puerto seguro, el safe harbor. Es un principio por el cual, si tú tienes tus servidores en un tercer país, no es de aplicación la mayoría de las normativas, sobre todo las más restrictivas, sobre la información que pasa por ese servidor. Y claro, pues es muy, muy complejo, si existen ese tipo de principios que cruzan fronteras y que las normas no pueden cruzar fronteras en principio, ¿no? Es muy difícil frenar esto.
Era el periodista Pablo Romero, de Público.es, un periodista que lleva ya más de 2 décadas dedicado a la información de Internet y sociedad conecta.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, del colectivo Más Voces, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Doshkli y de Norma Martínez y de tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
I'm Sakura Saunders. You're listening to Freak Radio Santa Cruz, FRSC 101.
And it's Thursday, the 29th of March, here at Freak Radio Santa Cruz, and probably where you are too, or maybe not. We do archive these shows. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides coming up at you on 101.3 FM or freakradio.org. We're still looking for studio space, so in case you're looking for $500, give me a call, and I'll put you through to the collective. My number is 831-423-HUFF, or 423-4833. That's HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We meet every other week and brood and rant about how to stop the city's attack on homeless people. If you're interested in that, show up at the Sub Rosa Cafe next Wednesday, almost a week from now, and we will, you'll hear this and you'll hear that, and you'll be able to speak up, too, around the latest shenanigans from the shitty council and from other departments of the city that are actually more powerful than the city council. And we'll try to find some of our own power as well. So for the next 2 hours, we got some interesting stuff coming up. But again, as I said before, if you find, or maybe I didn't entirely say it before, but I've said it many times before, we're looking for a 10x10 space indoors or outdoors in the Santa Cruz area generally. It could be outside the city limits, but hopefully not too far outside. We've been considered Watsonville, but that's a ways away, where we can actually set up our equipment. There will be no question of legality or illegality, though we scorn at licenses. We believe free radio has to say what it fucking wants to say, to emphasize the point. However, the building that we would be using for a studio space would be a place from which we go out by internet, and that is completely legal, no matter how cranky we sound or how many so-called obscenities. They aren't really obscenities, of course. The real obscenities are used daily and have to do with politicians and war and other things that are generally considered commonplace. So if you find us a 10x10 space with electricity, internet, and access to a bathroom or a toilet or a porta-potty, chamber pot, that's going a little far, we will, if we can hold this for a year, we will give you $500. So ignore the ringing you may hear in the background, and if you know of any such locations, do give a call or get in touch with us at freakradio.org, where you can also find schedules and, well, all kinds of information about free radio in case you want to get more involved in free radio's activities, do your own antics on free radio. So featured today is going to be an interview with Santa Cruz City Councilman, woman, person, Sandy Brown, we talk about rent control, we talk about other items concerning homeless civil rights, and that, of course, is the main focus of this show, homeless civil rights. So that's the main focus, and we'll also be having an interview with a part of one with Salinas activist Wes White, who has been struggling to organize homeless people there, as well as to survive as a video journalist who isn't so much trying to make money, he doesn't make money that way, but to get information out to the community. And this is an interview that's been long delayed, but we're going to have that. Also, updates on the River Street campground from one of the employees, talking straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So don't go away, and we'll stay too.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
There's been lots of internet activity, particularly in the lefty, more radical alternative sites, about the police killing, some say murder, of Stephon Clark in Sacramento, which happened, last week, I guess? I mentioned this briefly, I believe, on last Sunday's show, or maybe a week ago. He's a 22-year-old African-American man who was killed in his yard, his backyard. Police were apparently searching for someone who had broken into a car. And when you read the back-and-forth chatter by bigots, racists, advocates, and people generally on the internet about this, you find different accounts, although, you know, I guess the only thing, they have a video that's been released, which I have not seen yet. Well, I've just remedied that by looking at the two-minute video, which you can find online. I'll look under Stephon Clark. That's Stephen with an O, Stephon. It's on the Sacramento Bee, apparently. I don't know if it's a website, but the Sacramento Bee video. I'm going to play you the audio portion of it. The only relevant part of it, really, are the first 20 seconds when they decide to shoot him. These are two officers following this guy. I think one of them is black, one of them is white, something like that. That was what I recall from various news accounts. But they're all, unfortunately, blue, which means that they're following this institutional officer safety first, shoot first, ask questions later kind of thing, which doesn't turn out too well for those of us who aren't blue.
Shots fired, some say don't. Show me your hands!
See your hands!
And at this point, the guy, of course, is either dead or dying. And what you see are two flashlights sort of searching around a grassy yard. The figure is very indistinct. People defending the police action, who I've read about online, claim it's rather obvious that they shouted he had a gun. And to me, I can barely hear that. You can hear some almost, you know, well, you heard it a moment ago. He got a gun! It was sort of like that, and it was quick, and then it was 20 or 21 shots. And there's some confusion in my mind. I read the original account by Black Lives Matter Sacramento. This happened in Sacramento, of critics claiming that that the guy was the victim of the police, suspect, if you want to use police terminology, was lying in the backyard for 4 hours before his grandfather who lives there was notified. But then there's other accounts that say the ambulance arrived some minutes later. So it's not really clear whether that's true. Then there's a claim that there were four different accounts given by the police about the so-called weapon in Stephon's hand, which turned out to be a cell phone, apparently. There's also the question of the audio being turned off and the video being turned off. Actually, the audio portion of the video being turned off. And that is, critics of the police suggest this gives the cops time to get their story straight, look for a spare gun to plant, and so forth. No idea whether that's in fact the case. But it's resulted in some pretty strong community action. Even the police chief, who I guess is black, has suggested that that was wrong, that it happened, and so forth. Whether it's going to actually make any real changes, such as, for example, the prosecution and conviction of the trial, at least, of the killers of Stefan. And, of course, above and beyond that, this whole massive focus on officer safety as distinguished from community safety is just really grotesque. And the huge amount of rights and privileges and powers that police departments have based upon the theory that there is some other most dangerous profession, which it is not. There are plenty of other professions we don't hear about much about, ranging from truck driver to taxi driver, that are more dangerous in terms of people who die on that job because of the job. So I'm going to play now a bit from the city council, which you can also find on Democracy Now. I think it was played today on Democracy Now, or maybe yesterday. Stefan Clark's brother, backed by supporters in the audience, doing what I might call a David Silva to resurrect the memory of a man who recently died himself, though not of police shooting. He liked to dance. He liked to stand up and complain about the city council's abusive behavior, whether it was cutting short people or just cutting short the lives of homeless people through its decisions. Anyway, he would, I think he would have approved what Stefan Clark's brother did. I can't show you the video, of course, but I can play you the audio. So I'll try to describe what's happening as this short video goes on. You're going to hear mostly a lot of shouting for Stefan Clark. And the main feature of this, and this is the video by an independent journalist, or it says AP, so maybe he's not that independent. I guess AP got it. He's Stefan Clark's brother. He has a cap on that says Justice or Else, and a hoodie that's has Stefan Clark emboldened on the back of it. He goes all the way up to the past the ribbon or the tape separating the city council from the public, and then goes sits on the desk right next to the mayor, who's at the center of this circular dais similar to the Santa Cruz City Council. And then other African-American activists join him. And they're all African-American, although there are, I think they're white and mixed race or whatever supporters in the audience. And people outside are holding up large signs. There are about three or four cameras. You finally hear him speaking, trying to talk to the mayor afterward. And I'll play that now.
Stefan Clark! Stefan Clark! Stefan Clark! Stefan Clark! Stefan Clark!
He's walking through the audience now. He's walking past the ribbon. And now he begins to do a dance as he walks up to the mayor's central mayor position. He jumps up on the desk, sits on it, faces the audience, shouting, Stefan Clark, waving his arms. Mayor stands up and folds his hands. And associates join him, also wearing black t-shirts. White leans over to listen to him, and Stefan Clark's brother tries to talk to him, and you can't hear what they're saying.
Karen, media, get the window. Media, get the window before I kick you out of here. Get the window.
He wants the media.
Get the window, I said.
He wants the media to look at those signs outside and show the crowds
hey,
of people outside.
Hey, Stavante. No, Stavante. Y'all hear me?
He's
the mayor.
Enough.
Y'all hear me? Do y'all got my
enough.
Back? Now, the mayor wants to talk to me. The chief of police got my brother killed. He
enough.
Doesn't care. He shows no emotion at all.
At all.
And y'all get mad at me for not crying
Stavante.
On the news?
Stavante.
And here's a bit more from the mainstream media, CNN, on this.
All right, the Sacramento community is outraged after the death of Stefan Clark, a 22-year-old unarmed black man who was shot and killed by police in his grandmother's backyard last weekend. Hundreds swarmed downtown Sacramento yesterday in protest.
And this is some of the video from that protest. Police did release video of the incident that happened this week. And I just want to give you a heads up. The video is disturbing. According to officials, the two officers involved, and here it is, as they were going to that backyard, they fired 20 rounds at Clark. They believed he was pointing a gun. The only thing that they recovered, however, at the scene was a cell phone, and the incident is, we know, under investigation.
Joining us now is Devante Clark, Stephon Clark's brother. Thank you for speaking with us, and of course, our condolences to you and your family. Devante, when you first saw this video, what went through your mind? What did you feel and think?
I felt like when I seen the video.
Yes.
Is that
yes,
what you said?
Yes.
The body cam video.
I never watched the video. I've never seen the video. I've never watched it on the news. I've never turned it on. Whenever I see it, people put it in their songs and in their clips and they share it. I never watched the video. I don't want to see that video. Never, ever, ever.
Mm. Tell me about your brother, Stevante.
He was hilarious. He was, you know, he was a hustler. He had to go get it by any means necessary. You know what I mean? He loved his children. He loved his children. He was a great father. That's why I got this GoFundMe down there. For his children, he loved his mother. He loved them babies. He loved his grandmother. You know, he was great, you know. And he just loved. He loved, loved, loved. And people are trying to just destroy and discredit him for the father he was. And he was just a great, perfect being. He was a perfect father. The kids loved him. They loved him.
So
his
they
kids
were
loved him.
There have been rallies and protests since your brother was killed. One last night.
Yes, sir.
What are you calling
yes,
for? What do you want to change?
I'm calling for my city to come up and show out. I'm so proud of Sacramento. I'm so proud. I've never been so proud of y'all. I've never been so proud of my city. I've never been so proud. You know, they probably did a little couple things, but at the same time, they've been together out there. They've been together strong, and they're doing it all for my brother. To see that all for my brother, shut down freeways, shut down basketball arenas, Kings owners have to come address the situation. This is deeper than that. Ain't nobody loved us but our city. Ain't nobody ever loved us but our city. Nobody reached out to us but people from our city. No Obamas, no Trumps, you know, nobody reached out to us but everybody from our city. All the people we got is us in my city. They looked out for us. I'm so proud of my city. I'm so proud of y'all. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so proud of them. I'm so proud.
Stevante, we're so sorry for the loss of your brother and for...
We're going to kind of call it here. I don't think she really gives a shit about the loss of his brother, except in the most conventional terms. I often have this feeling, and even about people that, you know, who I know who have died, but who I have not had really been particularly close to, I find it really... It's more than uncomfortable for me to hear people making these kinds of comments because, you know, even though it is traditional and you're trying to respect the feelings of those who are left behind, who have been deprived of the company and deprived of the life presence of the person who's gone. For me, the real question is, what are the real feelings of these folks involved? And you don't get much real feelings on CNN or actually even in society generally. People tend to be restrained or slip into conventional molds. Even, I think they fool themselves. I think we fool ourselves about this stuff, thinking that, you know, we feel badly for someone that we don't even know and we wouldn't have, you know, paid any attention to at all if they were alive. And if they came by and we, you know, they asked us for something particularly, I don't know. I could be just describing my own callousness. I suppose that's possible. The real issue, of course, is institutional police brutality, as far as I'm concerned, and massive abusive police power, and of course the kind of cover up that follows. Recent stories have been broadcast about this guy is, you know, has got gang connections and he had drugs in his system, all of which is kind of irrelevant to his getting shot 20 times in his grandmother, wasn't his grandfather, his grandmother's backyard, according to like it was CNN or AP.
The road that you now
I don't need you to be sorry because I can't do nothing when I'm sorry, okay? I need you to pray for me because...
You know, and I don't mean to, again, well, I do mean to cut off Stefan's brother because I don't know that... I think we caught the gist of what he's saying. And I think it is true that, you know, when I do these radio broadcasts, I'm appealing to people in Santa Cruz. I have absolutely, hopefully, I don't think I have any illusions about the police department and police officials and even people who are in political organizations on boards of directors. Steve Plaich, take note. You know, individuals who are, even have left labels stuck on their shirts. I'm afraid that political power and institutional power tends to corrupt in the sense that people follow orders and they pay attention to who's above them in power and they tend to act in certain ways, essentially ignoring those who are below them in power. They may try to act differently, but the nature of the power structure, once people have accepted it and tried to become a part of it, transforms them. That's my belief. And then there's the matter of the California Department of Justice getting involved in so-called independent oversight into the police shooting of Stephen Clark. And, of course, there's been a lot of people have showed up and blocked freeways. Sports teams have come out and supported Stephen Clark directly. And this, of course, you know, this is news for, 15 minutes of fame. The real question is whether it's going to impact the department and the policies. And unless there is sustained pressure on this department and on our department for the changes we need to see here in Santa Cruz, it ain't happening. When Ferguson was happening, Huff, the group I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, began picketing at the police station about what was going on here in Santa Cruz, ranging from concealment of what goes on with the use of force, the use of tasers, the use of chokeholds, racial and class profiling, more class profiling recently than racial profiling. We don't have much of a... There's a very small African-American population here, although it's here. And I think if you talk to almost any African-American, you'll learn about their experiences with racial profiling and social profiling here going on in Santa Cruz. But the issue is to change these things... and fundamentally, I think the whole structure of the police, the whole nature of policing has to be changed. It just comes from, I tend to agree with those who say it comes from slave catcher roots. It comes from, it's a class war against people who are poor, against workers who organize in unions, against folks who are homeless. It's designed to preserve the status quo. And however many pictures of Martin Luther King are raised or parades are had, the real issue is whether, you know, when the rubber meets the road, when cops shoot people dead, do they get held as accountable as ordinary people? It may not be the best thing to do to jail people for crimes. But if you're going to do it for people who don't have these little blue uniforms and these nice shiny badges, then you better do it for them too. And that just so rarely happens. For instance, here's a story from Wednesday's San Francisco Chronicle, March 28th. Louisiana's Attorney General ruled out criminal charges Tuesday against two white Baton Rouge police officers in the fatal shooting of a black man during a struggle outside a convenience store nearly 2 years after his death caused widespread protests. If the protests had continued, as is my addition, you bet they'd be trying to do something else. They would have continued at least their expressions of condolences and more investigations, maybe even some criminal charges. But really, the amount of response depends upon the amount of pressure. That's my belief. Attorney General Jeff Landry's decision came nearly 11 months after the Justice Department ruled out federal criminal charges. In Alton Sterling's July 2016 death, Officer Blaine Salamone shot and killed Sterling during a struggle outside a convenience store where the 37-year-old black man was selling homemade CDs. Officer Howie Lake II helped wrestle Sterling to the ground, but Lake didn't fire his gun. two cell phone videos of the shooting quickly spread, and again, there is the other reason that we even hear about this, quickly spread on social media, leading to large protests. So please have your cell phone handy to video police activity that you see in your community. Landry made the announcement of no charges against the officers at a news conference after meeting with family members of Sterling. Relatives and their lawyers angrily denounced the decision. Quinietta McMillan, the mother of one of Sterling's children, Cameron, said the officers killed Sterling in cold blood. They took a human away, they took a father away, she said. Landry said his office reviewed all the evidence compiled by the Justice Department and also conducted its own interviews of eyewitnesses. I know the Sterling family is hurting, Landry told reporters. I know they may not agree with the decision. Toxicology and urine test results showed Tuesday that Sterling had cocaine, methamphetamine, fentanyl, and other drugs in his system at the time of the confrontation. Landry said it was reasonable to conclude Sterling was under the influence of drugs. Did they drug test the officers? It's never clear to me, but if we're going to talk about drug testing. During the struggle with the officers, and that contributed to his noncompliance with officers' commands. Well, perhaps some things the officers took contributed to their aggressive behavior and their murderous behavior toward this guy, at least this one individual's, Blaine Salamone's, murderous behavior. Of course, the real murderous behavior doesn't necessarily have to come from a specific drug taken at the time. It can come from the whole institutional training, backing, judicial connections that the police force has and knows that they can get away with, in fact, that are trained to do and have peer pressure to do. Landry did not take any questions from reporters. And again, reminding you, Landry is the Louisiana Attorney General. A lawyer for two of Sterling's five children slammed the report as biased. L. Chris Stewart said investigators did not follow up with the witnesses and relied heavily on the two federal investigators who already looked into the case. He also criticized the decision to put Sterling's criminal history into the report, which he said had nothing to do with the case. The officer's body cameras and a store surveillance camera also recorded the encounter. These videos have not been released. This is 2 years later. But Baton Rouge Police Chief Murphy Paul said he intends to release both after he concludes the disciplinary process for two officers who have remained on paid administrative leave since the July 5, 2016 shooting. Can't imagine this happening to someone who didn't have a nice blue uniform, a badge, and a nice job of that kind. And yes, it is nice in the sense that it's... I'm not going to comment on how well paid it is. I don't know what Louisiana police officers are paid. But I do know that they have a very strong union in California. And they can apparently get away with murder. And they do in many jurisdictions. And that is something we need to fight.
When our towns were in flame and yet we got the blame, I wasn't surprised. When police stormed the streets and no one came to our needs, I wasn't surprised. Well, it wasn't our last and it wasn't our first. My people are killed even right in our church. And maybe I'm wise from too many cries, but I wasn't surprised when they shot Fred and Mark as they slept in the dark. I wasn't surprised when the commission contended it was in self-defense. I wasn't surprised. Well, it wasn't our last and it wasn't our first. My people are killed in their sleep in the church. And maybe I'm wise from too many cries, but I wasn't surprised. In a southern jail cell, a guard gave a girl hell, and I wasn't surprised. She fought back and defied, became an outlaw statewide, and I wasn't surprised. Well, it wasn't our last, and it wasn't our first. My people are killed in the prisons and church. Well, right down the block, a young boy picked a lock, and I wasn't surprised. Well, the man shot him dead. He was hungry, how he bled. I wasn't surprised. Well, it wasn't our last, and it wasn't our first. My people I killed down the block in the church. And maybe I'm wise from hearing his cries, but I wasn't surprised. He was walking to class across the Jackson State grass, and I wasn't surprised. But it wasn't our first, and it wasn't our last. My family is killed even crossing the grass. And maybe I'm wise from hearing his cries, but I wasn't surprised. Your children fall, and I grieve for you all, but it wasn't surprised. I have known all along that they're mean and they're strong, so don't be surprised. Well, it wasn't your last, it was only your first. The day will come around that they'll kill you in church. Well, I'm bitter as hell, but one thing I'll tell you, you might be surprised. If we stand side by side to stop this genocide, they will be surprised. For as long as we're silent, as long as we're still, they'll gun us and shut us.
And that was Kristen Lem's I Wasn't Surprised from, I think it's from the 80s, actually. I played that one in the 90s when I was doing the early days of this show, which you can still hear on by going back to the archives on the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website, huffsantacruz.org, if you're an old-time listener or a person who wants to know about old times. But getting back to newer times, here's some audio from the Red Church where I ran into an employee of the River Street Campground. That's a campground I've described as the Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground out on Highway 9 just before you leave town. It's the campground that replaced the San Lorenzo camping area, which was much more spacious. It was open to coming and going. This new campground is surrounded by barbed wire. It has a police substation right outside, half a block away. It also has first alarm security thugs lingering nearby. And inside, about a third of the residents is taken up with, I think it's called the downtown safety team, the downtown neighborhood team. I never get that name right, but it's a group of homeless folks. I don't know if all of them are homeless, who have been hired to police downtown, where that means actually clean up downtown in terms of, I think they're a, I hope I'm not mistaking, I'm not really too familiar what their job is, but they're taking up a significant number of the tents in the River Street Campground. They're also employed there. And you might say, well, isn't it good to have formerly homeless people employed, A, and B, don't they understand more what homeless folks have to deal with as in camping situations and what they are more likely to be comfortable with and so forth. And I think there's truth in that. But unfortunately, there's also truth that when you give power to people who haven't had it, I saw this at the Homeless Community Resource Center under Karen Gillette in the 90s, and then under Ken Cole, the Homeless Service Center, which still exists, but I call it now the Homeless Lack of Services Center because it no longer provides meals for the homeless community or an emergency shelter for the homeless community. It's a fund magnet that exists under the pretext of giving people a pathway to housing, which doesn't exist. So the dangers of too much power too quickly, particularly if you're trying to fit into an institutional structure and you're sort of desperate because you have been homeless, now you want to kind of make your way, it can be, I think, can be difficult for people. Power can be abused. But anybody can abuse it. You don't have to be homeless to abuse it. In fact, I would say, I'm claiming that it may be even more likely to, if you're coming from a powerless situation. But it's not necessary, of course. It doesn't always happen that way. Anyway, let's hear from someone who is exercising a kind of power, though it's not entirely clear how much power he has. I ran into him at the Red Church where we were. It was around 6 o'clock. I was actually going to go out with another Huff activist to look at the River Street campground. They won't let you in, of course, but to talk to people outside. And it's not entirely clear if they'll try to drive people away who are talking to people, trying to talk to people outside. I don't know that that's true. Outside the Homeless Lack of Services Center on Coral Street, they put in what they called a no impact or low impact, and they're quite sure which one it is, zone, which actually doesn't affect outsiders like me so much, but anybody who wants to get services there, if they linger there too long, in the past at least, there was the concern that their services would be cut off. I don't know how frequently that happened, but that seemed to be the narrative that was going around. And whether that's also the case outside the River Street campground along Highway 9, I don't know. Anyway, let's listen to some of this. You're going to also hear the Goon Squad guy, who is a nice enough guy. His name is Steve, but he takes his job of running people off the property who are coming to the Red Church for their 6 o'clock meal and service. And it's a sort of a friendly scene. I've been coming to it for years. And it also takes place simultaneously with a group called the Penny University, run by Paul Lee, which is in the next room, where Paul Lee has a speaker. I think that happens between 5 and 6. And the church service is between 5 and 6. It's not really a church service in the most solemn sense, although there's some prayer going on. It often features speakers and so forth, and recommend people might want to check it out. But more important for me is an opportunity to talk to homeless folks about what's been going on with them, and that happens between 6 and 7 when there's a meal, until Steve the bouncer begins to kind of hustle people out of the room. He's actually gotten better about that. But he apparently has been either given orders or decides that he should be doing what he's doing. He refuses to allow anyone to stand outside the building. And it used to be, relatively free lingering outside the building. And people were encouraged not to sit on the lawn or the grass. I don't know why that was either. Originally, 6 or 7 years ago, people would sit on the grass outside the Red Church. And indeed, if you come by on a farmer's market day, I don't know how, actually, I can't really speak for it now, but I think it really depends on how you're dressed. I think the idea of making certain areas no homeless zones, unless they're carefully tucked inside a red building, or inside a building, in this case, the Red Church, Calvary Episcopal Church. And this is a building I'm talking about, is at Lincoln and Cedar Streets. It's right across from the farmer's market, which people may be familiar with on Wednesdays. Anyway, I was trying to chat with and interview this employee of the River Street campground who had come to he's also a musician, to play some music and to socialize. We were accosted by this Steve, the security guard, who told us we had to go inside or on the sidewalk, as though standing and talking on the path was bothering someone or criminal behavior in some way. I'm still upset with myself for not essentially telling him to fuck off, leave me alone, and just go do what you have to do. What actually happened here, and you can hear me beginning to sputter at the memory, was more important the content of the conversation I was having with this River Street employee, River Street Campground employee. Let's listen to that.
Permission to come into the camp.
I never can tell about permission. We're talking with a man about River Street Campground. Yeah. And what is your name? Well, let's go this way over here because
you gotta be on the sidewalk here inside. But you can't be on the top here.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna try to get into the Penn University. So that's over here.
Well, that's in there.
Yeah. I know. Let's see if we can get in or not. And we might duck out too. So that was Steve, the Fuhrer guard, making sure that human beings don't use the walkways at the wrong times. We're talking with
Joyful Heart.
And Joyful Heart, previously known as
Swami, or Baba, or Hey You, or various and sundry other names.
Let's talk quietly here on the steps so we don't get molested by Steve. We're actually at the Red Church. It's Monday, the 26th of March, and I'm talking with
Joyful Heart.
Joyful Heart, you're currently employed by the River Street Campground, but you're also a known musician who've been seen playing downtown. Also have been notorious for the infamous Dharma Blanket near the coffee roasting company. Is that not true?
This is true, yes.
Okay. And so, what do you make of the situation out at the River Street Campground? I've heard tell that you're employed there, what, $17 an hour?
Yes, that's right.
How many hours a week?
I have 24 hours a week right now.
And any kind of benefits, or is that pretty much the total?
Oh, full benefits from the city.
What are full benefits? What does that involve?
I really don't know, but I'm a legitimate city employee, so all of the benefits.
If you're part time, you don't get much, but you might get more. I don't know what their plan is.
Well, I was told I have full benefits.
Okay, well, they may be full of it, but maybe you're right. You never can tell. So you also live on the property there during the night?
Yes, that's true.
And how many people there work with you?
Gosh, that's kind of hard to say. We've got a full staff. There's always at least two people on shift, on duty at any time. So I haven't actually counted, but we've got a good maybe 15 or 20 people on staff.
And I understand there are at least three levels of policing. There's the internal folks like yourself who are kind of the camp version of the hosts, perhaps, that used to be downtown, the friendly greeters, if you will, who are helpful at solving problems and resolving conflicts and things of that sort, and enforcing the rules, of course. And there's also the first alarm folks who are on the gate, right? And then there's the lovable police station wagon across the street to deal with the many criminals who might show up at the campground. Has there been a lot of crime at the campground?
None at all.
Excellent. Do you do that due to your strict enforcement or just because the homeless are really looking for a place to sleep rather than a place to do criminal activity?
We got some great residents. The people who are there are really, really thankful to have a chance to sleep. Mm-hmm. And no, it isn't about policing at all. In fact, the first alarm guys are there to keep people out.
Now, are there a lot of people who are trying to just shoving to get in?
Well, no, but every once in a while we have somebody who's a troublemaker who wants to come in and do harm to somebody in the camp. And yeah, the first alarm is basically here to keep those kinds out.
The last time that happened was
a couple days ago, actually.
And what describe the incident to me.
No.
I mean, in the general terms, you don't have to mention any name.
It's just a prior resident who left under unhappy terms. He was causing problems with other campers, and he was trying to get back in to cause other problems.
What's the procedure for actually, how many people would you say have had to leave under like circumstances?
Yeah, I really don't know. Most of my shifts are at night, and nothing happens then.
You haven't had cause to try to evict anybody?
Not me, no. I actually have had cause to get on first alarm for having...
Criticizing the first alarm?
Yeah, well, they had a security guard who wasn't doing his job, and I got him replaced.
And what exactly was his job?
Yeah.
As soon as we're finished, we will. I'll tell you what, Swami, I'll meet you, but I've got to talk to someone here. I really am going in here. That's why I'm kind of waiting. What's that? I'm trying to.
Well, I'll give you a longer interview at a more convenient time.
You're going to be around in about 20 minutes.
And what's happening here again is the Steve, who some have called the soup Nazi, I guess that based on an old TV show, has urged us to go inside, or directed us to go inside to set a good example. Of course, the really setting an example would be to tell him, as I've said, to go take care of some other problems and stop harassing us. But joyful heart, joyfully eager to follow orders, walked off to get inside, and I didn't feel like talking to myself outside. And so I did too, and the conversation continues inside. One of the reasons not to go inside is, A, there are actually two meetings taking place. One is this meeting, as I mentioned before, of Paul Lee's Penn University, which one person is speaking and everyone else is listening, so you can't really talk in there. And the next room is a rather loud congregation of folks getting food, chatting, chattering. It's kind of hard to hear yourself talk. So the obvious place to go is outside. And that's where we were. And we were then essentially forced or pressured not to do that. And I'm going to try to make sure that that doesn't happen again. But who knows what will happen if and when I contest the issue.
It's shock.
Yeah. As soon as we're finished, we will. I'll tell you what, Swami, I'll meet you, but I've got to talk to someone here. I really am going in here. That's why I'm kind of waiting. What's that? I'm trying to.
Well, I'll give you a longer interview at a more convenient time.
You're going to be around in about 20 minutes?
I actually need to go home and go to sleep.
Do you have a phone?
I do, actually. I'll give you an email and give you my contact
info. We've been talking with
Joyful Heart.
And thank you, Steve. Thank you, Joyful Heart. So we actually now have the shuttle schedule. Run that one more time by me, Swami.
Is it both ways?
The shuttle runs the circuit, leaving the campground and back at the campground. It leaves at 7 a.m., 8 a.m.
We're hearing now is the shuttle service to the River Street Campground and to and from, I guess. I'm not quite sure if that's what it is, but it's leaving at least. I'm not sure. This is the shuttle service that you have to take if you are in the program. If you don't, you won't be in the program for long. You're not allowed to walk up to the campground or walk away from the campground. This is the shuttle service you have to use.
10 noon, 3 p.m., 6:10 p.m., and 8:10 p.m.
And where can you pick that up?
I don't remember.
Now, how many people does the shuttle take?
Well, I'm not sure the exact capacity, but if more than one run is required, we do that.
And I've requested the shuttle service schedule so we can... people can know, you know, where they can meet people as they come out of the shuttle, so they can know, so the rest of the community can see really how this operates. And I was allowed a peek at it on February 28th when I was out at the San Lorenzo campground, and they were forcing everyone to move. I should say assisting them in moving, and they were assisting them, not just forcing them. Forcing isn't the word. The threat was that there would be confiscation of property and presumably criminal charges if people didn't get out of there within the deadline moved. And I talked about that at the time. First it was February 28th, and then it was noon March 1st, and then it was supposedly 3 days down the road, and then suddenly it was half a day later. But in any case, I was shown a schedule by Susie, the city manager's, the woman right underneath the city manager who runs the program right above Monteith, who is the guy who actually is he's been featured in the Good Times article this week, if you want to check out the Good Times, which has a story on the campground, a very positive story. I'm glad to hear they let a reporter in there, because when I talked to Jessica York at City Council 2 days ago, she said they wouldn't let her in. Now, I can understand people banning the Sentinel in some circumstances. I mean, the Sub Rosa doesn't like police coming in. And, in fact, it tells them not to come in unless they have a warrant. So I can appreciate that. But not allowing homeless people to have visitors in a campground is pretty peculiar and pretty harsh and pretty abusive, I think, of basic rights for folks. Such is my belief. Anyway, Joyful Heart doesn't seem to know the schedule in terms of where it goes. I mean, he knows what the hours or the times it leaves, and apparently they're also, it's shifting around, and that may be good because they're trying to accommodate the needs of the people there. But when I sought documents, and I actually did get a few documents yesterday, I believe it was. Maybe it was today. Actually, it was today, I think. From the Susie O'Hara, Susie I spoke of a moment ago. Actually, it was from Kelly Thompson, who's the City Council's public record person. That document was not included, which is to say the schedule of where they come, where they go, and I did get some documents. So those have been sent out, by the way, on the Huff email list. If you want to be part of the Huff email list, give me an email at rnorse3@hotmail.com, and I will put you on the list. Or call me on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Let's get back to Joyful Heart and his description and discussion of how things work at the River Street Campground. The person asking questions is a Huff member who probably prefers to remain anonymous. He's, some would call him a hyper-paranoid fellow. I would say he's perhaps unduly secretive. Why use psychiatric labels?
Okay, and the current capacity of the camp, or how many people were in the camp last night?
I'm not exactly sure, but the number is somewhere between 60 and 70.
Okay.
It's been changing a lot the last week.
How many people would you say in the last couple weeks have gotten on, into the camp that weren't previously in?
Not sure, but somewhere between 5 and 10.
And
that's every week? It kind of turns over like that, 5 or 10?
Not every week, but when we get open spots, we bring in as new people as soon as we can.
Now, how about the theft problem? Is there a secure place for people to keep their possessions?
I keep my guitar there.
You have a locker or something?
I don't need it. We have secure storage, but it's we've got great people. You know, theft is not happening.
Because we heard that's happening over at the Salvation Army.
Yeah. Other places are experiencing stuff like that, but we don't seem to. We've got good people and who are really happy to have a place to stay long term, and they don't want to mess with that. So
that's good. I mean, it's been a long time that this city has needed something like that, and so you can almost come and go as you please with that many buses, right?
Almost, yeah. It's not exactly free to come and go, but then, you know, that was the deal that the city made with the neighborhood. The people in the neighborhood said, we won't allow it unless you...
What people are those?
The people who live there. The regular people who live.
How many people are we talking about?
I'm not sure.
Actually, people in the neighborhood have nothing to say about establishing the campground in terms of the right to be there. And the notion that homeless people are somehow dangerous or bestial, that require these three levels of policing and won't allow people to walk back and forth, is just, it's discriminatory, it's debasing, and what it really shows me is that I guess what they're trying to do is prevent a situation such as happened at the Coral Street area, where homeless people denied access to services began to put up their tents outside. Here they're trying to make sure that people are kept far away from this little model campground, which is, again, you notice, only for a small number of homeless people. And again, I want to make it clear, I think a campground is a good first start in a certain sense, for sure. But if it's only used as a way of preening the image of the city and making like you're doing something about homelessness when you're actually continuing to persecute the broad majority of homeless people outside, it's bullshit, in a simple word. It's a falsification of the situation. It's an attempt to cover up rather than to resolve a problem. Let's listen to more of Joyful Heart. And again, we're talking in the midst of the Calvary Episcopal Church Red Church meal, where we're sort of standing in the middle of the room chatting, and folks are making different comments. Well, here we go.
You have to ask.
The only thing I can think of that's up there is the chamber.
There's a lot of residents. I mean, we live right next door to, there's probably 15, 20 houses within a stone's throw of the camp.
Right, within a stone's throw or within a couple blocks?
Within a couple of blocks.
That's different. That's not a stone's throw.
Depends on who's throwing the stone there.
And if you drive by the Boneyard campground next to the bus station, where the buses are stored out there, you will see that there's virtually no residences around. There's a storage company nearby. There are a couple of houses. But the notion that somehow the local houses have a veto on whether there can be a campground there, I mean, they could raise an issue, I suppose, to the use permit. But the notion that they can require it and that we should somehow place the civil rights of poor people in the hands of those who regard them as, at best, something to occasionally pat on the head and say tisk tisk and maybe do a charity meal for twice a year, and at worst, run them out of town or lock them up in jail or get them out of sight. You don't allow the people with those points of view to run what's going on. And, of course, that Santa Cruz does, unfortunately, or at least it pays a lot of attention. Santa Cruz authorities do. That ain't the right way to go, I suppose.
It's going to have a trebuchet.
Yeah. If you've got a bigger trebuchet, then, yeah, you can throw a stone pretty far. That's true.
So what are the main problems that you've had to deal with at the camp, if any?
Most of the problems we've had have just been organizational. I mean, this is a brand new thing, and we're still, it's like the shakedown cruise the first few weeks and getting things to where we know what we're doing and how we're doing it. And now things are starting to running really smoothly.
And so when the campers have come to you to ask for, what are the major things that they are asking you about, if they do? Or do they ask you about anything?
Usually it's asking if there's any sugar for the coffee or if the showers are open yet.
And what is the shower schedule like?
Let's see. That may be changing at the moment, but right now it's 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. till 9 p.m.
And how does that sit with folks? Does that actually accommodate most of them, or would you say that different hours are needed?
We had a camp meeting last week, and the residents said that they would like to have some afternoon shower time, and that they didn't need as much morning time shower. So we've divided we're talking about dividing the morning shower time in half and moving some of it to the afternoon. It's more than adequate time. We're usually twiddling our thumbs saying, does anybody else want the shower?
Tell me about the camp meeting situation. How frequent is it? What are the procedures that are used?
Well, we've only had one so far, and it's basically just announced a week in advance with...
And it should be noted that the camp has been open since March 1st, and so that means one meeting in the last 4 weeks.
Posters and all the hosts saying we're having a meeting, and then who wants to show up shows up, and the bosses will sit and listen while the residents speak their minds.
And how long was this one meeting?
This one lasted about 45 minutes.
And what were the main concerns expressed other than the shower situation?
It was the shower and requesting an eighth shuttle run, which is being provided for. Trying to get better Wi-Fi in the camp.
How about smoking?
Oh, yeah, we have a smoking section.
Okay, no problems with
any of that?
Tobacco and marijuana?
I don't know if I can officially answer that one.
You sent a skunky
one. No problem, or he would
but,
be complaining, Robert.
Yeah,
just move on.
Yeah, there's, yeah, what he said.
I see. So, anything else come up at this meeting that you remember?
It went well. It seemed like the residents were satisfied in the opportunity to voice their
concerns. How many people came?
I'd say we had a turnout of about 20.
Out of a total population there of
60 to 70.
Now what's the male-female split?
Oh, I don't know off the top of my head. Maybe 3 to 1.
In favor of males?
Yes.
Now, how about disabled people? How many people are actually physically disabled there that you're aware of?
We have one lady in a wheelchair. We have two developmentally disabled gentlemen, one of whom doesn't require a wheelchair all the time, but sometimes does. We're doing our best to accommodate the disabled as much as we can.
And there are only two or three people who are that disabled?
At the moment, yeah. We did have somebody else who was disabled, but they left under reasons of their own.
What about religious council? Is there a Jewish Episcopalian?
Well, there is reportedly a holy man on site.
This guy looks like a Jesuit.
Weird character with a black hat, yeah. Of course. What is it you want to put out as a message yourself from your experiences there, if anything?
It's simply awesome. I've been homeless myself for 20% of my life. And I've been homeless in various different cities, and I have never seen anything like this before. It is, in my mind, the perfect first step. And I'd like to remind everybody that all of the greatest things, every one of them started with a very small beginning.
With the exception, of course, the French Revolution, where they threw everything out at once.
Well, you know, that's the French.
Oh, it did. They threw out feudal privileges forever, believe me.
Yeah, that
lasted up to the present day.
We can replace by capitalism.
That's true. The bourgeois got theirs.
For a while. Yeah.
It's funny how history tends to creep in everywhere, isn't it?
We always get screwed.
Or herstory, is the case, maybe.
They
don't hear much about that.
The system, and we all get screwed.
So, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, please, everybody, support this project that the city is doing. It's actually a step in the right direction for a change. And and by the way, if you're ever up in the Poganip and you see some trash, please pick it up.
Well, I think the Parks and Rec Rangers is doing their best to treat homeless people like trash everywhere else outside the campground.
Now,
do you have anything actually you want to say about the vast majority of homeless people who are not in the privileged position that these 60 to 70 people are?
Well, you know, that's something that those of us who are actually doing the work at the camp, we're really keenly aware of the fact that there's a lot of people. And that's why I bring up the fact that great things start with small beginnings. You know, this is a very small beginning, but it has the potential of really, really being something that helps a lot of people. And not just here in Santa Cruz, but nationwide and hopefully worldwide.
It needs to be nationwide or we become a magnet, right?
We've been listening to the words of
Joyful Heart.
And
I'm not on this show anymore. I quit Free Radio.
A troublemaker. Anything you want to add, Troublemaker? Any other questions?
Try and do good. Feel good and feel a strong yearning for freedom in your heart. And then the Lord of Hosts will be with you. Or the fishy aliens.
Thank you. And thank you, sir.
God bless everybody.
All right.
Put the prayers back in the schools, install parochial aid, allow for coffee.
going back, back to the good old days when men were really men and women knew their place. Back, back a couple of centuries and welcome back the days of the theocracy. The family is so holy, there must be no divorce. And if a wife is not content, she must adjust, of course. And if he's forced to beat her, it's all for her own good. She must know what her limits are, as any woman should. We're going back, back to the good old days when men were really men and women knew their place. Back, back a couple of centuries and welcome back the days of the theocracy.
Theocracy from Kristen Lem's Equality Road album. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is a pre-recorded show, but it was recorded on March 29th, so we ain't that pre-recorded. I'll be continuing to play you interviews from the Red Church on Sunday when this show continues in a longer format, starting at 9:30 in the morning, so tune in or check it out later on the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org under Lost Shows. Now I'm going to play for you at least part of an interview I did today with City Councilwoman Sandy Brown, who I've had my differences with. You're going to hear some of that on this broadcast, though she was very forthcoming. She took the initiative to call me back, as promised, and hopefully she will also be carrying out her commitment to inquire by email of the staff certain questions, to ask some specific things that I've talked about on the air before, ranging from what prompted the ICE raids and the collusion between the Santa Cruz Police Department and the Immigration Services last year around this time. What's some documentation to show that the police are actually paying attention to violations of the law by merchants downtown who have these big A-frame signs up. You've seen them. They're completely illegal, but instead police go after people sitting around with their own little need change, will play for food, things of this sort. And also other issues, which you'll hear discussed. We also talk about the rent control issue and what happened at the last city council meeting around the issue of affordable housing. You're not going to hear all of this today because this is the first part of an interview, the second part of which we'll play on Sunday, or hope to do so. And let's get into it. I'm on the line with activist and city council member Sandy Brown. Hello, Sandy. And, Sandy, you're
they're sending you off to meeting after meeting. You're on the housing committee or whatever it's called, and no doubt many other committees. Most recently, there was a city council meeting on Tuesday, which involved the housing element, the housing committee's report, how to delay for another 3 months. What would we call that, the substance of that meeting?
Well, I think that, so it's the Housing Blueprint Subcommittee of the city council, made up of three members, just for the public. That's me, Cynthia Chase, and Martine Watkins. We have been meeting for since January now, and I guess the substance of the meeting on Tuesday was we'd like some additional time to continue to do our work. And we ultimately adopted a recommendation that, in addition to continuing to do this work, we direct staff to bring some more immediate actionable items back to the Blueprint Subcommittee and to the Planning Commission so that we can move forward with particular recommendations, and the emphasis was on how we deal with accessory dwelling unit permitting, legalizing abated units, so units that have been red tagged due to not for health and safety reasons, but for, you know, code enforcement, and the piece that I really insisted on including was an increase in the inclusionary housing rate for new development projects. So these are all kind of TBA, the direction was for staff to come back with that more information.
Sandy, explain for those who are novices what inclusionary housing, what the policy currently is, and how you want to see it changed.
Okay. So the current policy is 15% of units in new development projects must be affordable. However, and affordable means somewhere between 60 and 100% of median income. So it's, you know, when we're talking about a county with a median income of, you know, $60,000 a year-ish, affordability means affordable to just regular working people. We're not talking about very, very low-income housing by any means.
How would you estimate, and you probably don't have figures, but one of your other issues, one of the major issues I'm concerned about, and you are too, is rent. Rent control, rent freeze, just eviction protection. If you're looking at the renters throughout the city, where do you think their median income lies? Do you have any sense of that?
You know, it's a good question. I don't. I would guess that it's lower than the if we just looked at renters, it would be a lower median. But I mean, I do think that there are plenty of renters in this town who also are earning living very well wages, let's say. So I, as you know, I've been a living wage proponent for many years and increasing the minimum wage. I don't know the answer to that question. What I do know is that the No Place Like Home project that Miriam Greenberg and Steve McKay from UCSC sociology professors have engaged in with many students, large groups of students, in the surveying that they did, they found that it was something like 30% of the people surveyed who were renters in this town, and I don't remember how many were in their survey sample, but it was pretty significant. 30% pay more than 70% of their income for rent.
And the average income, any sense of that?
Don't know.
See,
they may have some data available at their website. I don't know if they asked for people to report their monthly or annual income.
I mean, this seems to me,
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. This seems to be a key issue that maybe the staff, when it's not busy filling out other reports or, you know, increasing stay-away order problems for homeless people in the parks and so forth, could actually get into. I mean, it seems to me key information that, you know, has to be dealt with. But this housing committee that you're a part of, do I have the proper name for it? I'm not sure.
Housing Blueprint Subcommittee.
Were they...
I appreciate this one. The HBS.
Indeed. last year, there was a committee that kept meeting and meeting and meeting, and every, you know, special meetings here and there and yoop-de-doo. And I got the feeling that, you know, I was fed up with it after probably the first or second meeting. But is this the same committee that keeps meeting? Or
no, this committee was formed in January. January. Well, we were appointed in late December, and we started meeting in January of this year. So we've had quite a few meetings. I will say that I share the frustration expressed by people in the audience on Tuesday, constituents I've spoken with independently of the meeting, the public meetings, and some of my colleagues on the council as well, that we came back without any real recommendations for immediate action. And
but were you considering the same subjects as the previous housing committee? In other words, I you may have a different name, maybe a different makeup, but is it essentially the same stuff?
Well, it wasn't. Last year was not a committee. That was the mayor's listening tour. So Mayor Chase at the time, Cynthia Chase was mayor, she was really the one who worked with staff in that process. So they had many focus groups, meetings, and the document that this committee is working off of is the Voices on Housing report that came out of that.
So the contention,
so it wasn't an actual committee.
The contentions that there hasn't been public input are essentially horseshit, if you forgive my French. There was a lot of public input that essentially gave rise to this. It's just that for some reason, and maybe you can throw some light on it, and I'm not terribly hopeful that the kind of stuff I'd like to see come out of council, and maybe to some extent you would too, is anywhere near likely to come out of this council. But they have had plenty of public input, have they not?
Yes. So there are two things. I mean, I have two minds about this, as I often do, because I'm thinking about the nuance here. Yes, we have had endless community engagement and input. The question is whether or not it has been meaningful or has it felt meaningful to the community. And I think that's where the argument about not enough community input comes into play, because we can have all kinds of meetings, and when people come to those meetings but they feel like their voice is not being heard, that is, I think, where the challenge is, where the problem is.
Now, is that
my goal has been to try, when we talk about additional community engagement, to make that meaningful.
Is the process by which it was proceeding, I mean, you have this, you know, highly top-heavy staff presentation and then 2 minutes for the public to come in, you know, burp twice and then leave the mic. Is that the concern about there not being public input? I didn't hear much complaint. Unfortunately, I think I should have. I would have liked to hear a complaint about the length of public input and the amount of dialogue with the staff that the community could have as well as the council. But you know, what do you mean by, you know, in other words, how do you recommend this be changed? Just more of the same? I mean, what's the difference that you're looking for?
Well, I'd really like to see, I mean, personally, I've been advocating for us to establish an affordable housing commission at the city, because I think that we owe it to the public to have, I mean, we ask for oversight on public works, transportation, public safety, you know, Commission for the Prevention of Violence Against Women, the arts, and the housing is, you know, our planning commission, I do not believe, I mean, I believe they're quite capable people, but I don't believe that they do justice to
what would the affordable housing
goals that
if you got it, Sandy, what would the Affordable Housing Commission do?
Well, I think they would advise on policy. They would be able to have some oversight or feedback into projects, and with a specific focus on the affordability angle, because what we generally get is reporting that it's, you know, just won't pencil out to increase the affordability in new development projects. And I just remain unconvinced.
I
think that having special attention to that, paid to that,
explain what that means.
Coming from the community would be helpful.
Sandy, explains what that means. It won't pencil out. Again, I'm trying to, you know, pass this on to people who may not know.
Believe me, Robert, if I could explain that, I would, because I ask the rhetorical question almost every time this comes up in meetings. Can anybody explain to me what exactly penciling out means? And can anybody explain to me what a reasonable rate of return is? Because all of that information, that financial information, is privileged. We do not get access to it at the city, and developers are not going to be willing to release that information. So when I talk with people in the community, I hear different things. I hear, you know, 12 to 15% is the conventional wisdom on a reasonable rate of return, so profit, out of a project. I hear some people say we could make these projects work for 5 or 6% return.
So is there a precedent?
Some people say it can be up to 20%.
Is there a precedent in other cities for this? Are there affordable housing commissions there which have established those kinds of percentage levels? And let's begin with that question.
That's a very good question. I don't know. This is something that if you can find an intern for me, then I'll assign that as their first reason.
Hey, how come Crone has an intern and you don't? What's going on? Is this some sort of sexist thing going on?
He has a direct pipeline to students at the university, and quite frankly, so he interacts with students all the time. I don't. And quite frankly, I haven't been as proactive as I should be in getting them. So it's on my list. But I do think it's a very important question, and I'm glad you raised it.
Sure.
I'm sure there are. I'm not trying
to hold you, to the mat on it. I'm asking it because I'd like to, if you knew the answer, I'd want to know it. To be honest,
if I had any hope that we were going to get such a commission, I would invest some time in researching it. But that's just what I've said I would like to see, and I don't think that will have majority support for that.
Now, the people in the audience, I primarily came to at least the beginning of that meeting, which was a 7 p.m. meeting on Tuesday, 2 days ago, which because there was a renters outside were concerned about an issue that there apparently is no enforcement being planned by the city around the just eviction ordinance or the rent freeze ordinance, and that moreover they're even declining to send out snail mail letters to people who are landlords to even advise them of the existence of the ordinance. And it seemed that the audience was full of people. I would call them, sort of the neighborhood profiteers who are, trying to profiteer in order to, live in Santa Cruz, but who nonetheless, some of them are real estate folks, some of them are people who have lived here for a long time and are, each of them seems to be a special exception that wants to say that they, they have been the great landlords, only the few bad landlords we have to worry about. Just like you hear about the same, the few bad cops. It's not an institutional problem. It is a bad cop or a bad landlord. I didn't hear anybody on the city council, yourself or Crone, saying this is an institutional problem where it isn't just one bad landlord. It is an institutional problem. Or am I wrong? Is it not institutional here in Santa Cruz, the rent profiteering that is going on?
Well, okay, so to answer the immediate question, and then I'll go back to your first question. Yes, it absolutely is an institutional problem, and while I may not have said that explicitly on Tuesday night, I have certainly said it during public meetings. I certainly said it the night that we voted to enact a temporary moratorium on rent increases and a temporary just cause eviction ordinance, because that Apple's argument just doesn't resonate with me.
Do the ordinances you pass mean anything if they're not being enforced?
Well, I think they do in the sense that, that some people will, in good faith, attempt to comply with the law. I think that even if they don't like it, that there are people who are not going to say, well, too bad, I'm going to raise the rents as much as I want, I'm going to evict whoever I want anyway, come catch me. But at the same time, without enforcement,
do you have any
at least monitoring for compliance and enforcement, it is not as meaningful. It means that the ordinance does not have a lot of teeth in it.
Has anyone actually complied? What percentage of the landlords have complied, as far as we know? I've been heard complaints from the Rental Control Initiative people that there are people who have been raising their rents and, in defiance of the ordinance. I don't have any stats. They didn't have any specifics. Have you gotten any specifics or complaints as a council member?
I've received complaints about illegal rent increases.
How many?
Illegal under the current, the temporary order.
How many?
Yes. I've keep storing them in a folder. I think I've probably had about four or five, probably five at this point. And then I've heard from people in the community about others that haven't come directly to us. But it hasn't been a substantial number. Now, the problem is, without any real monitoring program. All we get are the people who experience this, who are aware that there is a law on the books, and we have no way of knowing how many, what the percentage of people, residents in the city actually know that we did this, right? So, or have, you know, or know what their rights are under the temporary rules. So it's really hard to say how, you know, how deep of a reach we've been able to make without any real monitoring compliance program. Now, our planning director says that would cost, you know, close to, I think he said $300,000, and we'd have to shut down all of, you know, all manner of other operations in order to do this, even for a few months. That is an argument that does not resonate with me. I've told him so, and I'll say it here. But at the same time, it would be a substantial investment of resources to get that information to do some the real monitoring we need. And so I've got, just going back around to your first question on this topic, we did include in the action that was taken on Tuesday night direction to the planning department to send messages, either email if we have them and snail mail for those contacts that we don't, for all of the contacts we have in registered under a rental inspection program. So that's about 5,000.
Any estimates of what...
Cross-reference that with anybody who has a business license as a landlord. So there's probably a lot of overlap, but we may get a few more people.
Any indication of how many people actually do rent in Santa Cruz? I know it's only 22% of the renters are covered by the rent freeze, but then just eviction covers all of them at the moment, right?
No, it doesn't cover all. It covers a broader swath of renters, but it does not cover renters. So, for example, me, I live in a home, and the rent control initiative, if it qualifies and is passed, I wouldn't be covered because I live in a home with my landlord, and we share a kitchen and a bathroom. Mm-hmm. Now, the rent freeze that we adopted at the city extended that exemption to people who have renters who live on the same property with them. So an ADU or a duplex, as well as within their home. So that was what it took to get that, to get majority support.
And this is the rent freeze or both the rent freeze and the just eviction?
That's just cause. The rent freeze, the number of people who are subject to the rent freeze and or rent control should it be adopted is largely, not entirely, there are a few little nuances depending on the way that it's written, potential exemptions, but overall that is primarily limited by the Costa-Hawkins Act, which, as you may have heard, and I hope people who are listening who care about this signed the petition to get it on the ballot. Oh, I'm not supposed to say take action on the radio. Oops. Get involved, figure out what's going on. If you want more information, the state law prevents us from...
We've talked about Costa-Hawkins on this show, and I agree with you, but do I understand that you can't, as an individual, specifically say... you favor abolishing Costa-Hawkins. Is there some limitation on your ability to speak?
I apparently the FCC says I am not allowed, and nobody on the radio is allowed to say anything that triggers a desire for people to take action of any kind.
I know where you got that, Sandy.
I found this out yesterday from Bruce Brown, if you want more info.
Oh, yeah, I definitely do. I'll get in touch. I'll call him up or maybe email him or something. That's very strange. Free Radio's ignored that for 25 years.
I know.
And we'll continue to ignore that. But I don't want you to get personally in trouble. Of course, sometimes you got to get in trouble to get anywhere where you need to go. But there was another issue that came up at the meeting, which was raised by landlords, I beg your pardon, homeowners of plenty.
No, housing providers.
Housing providers, yes. There were a couple of other euphemisms that were used as well. they were saying that, there was a concern that the just eviction, that one of the real violations of the landlord's privileges, if you will, or powers.
Rights.
Rights, of course, rights. Is that they, once the lease ends, the landlord can't terminate the lease unless there are a specific set of reasons similar, that seem to be kind of lumped in with the eviction restrictions. You can't evict someone for this, this, and this. And similarly, you can't terminate their lease even if their lease is over. What's your reaction to that, and is that an accurate criticism?
Well, sure, it's an accurate criticism. Again, it's not one that resonates with me, because when put up against the lack of rights that renters have and the lack of stability that renters have, I personally think that it's an important protection. But it is a legitimate criticism. I mean, it is true that there will be, it will make it much more difficult for landlords to evict tenants. I mean, part of the reason that rent control and just cause eviction go together so often, not just in Santa Cruz, but in other communities where these campaigns have taken place, some successfully, some unsuccessfully, the inability to restrict rent increases, the ability restricting rent increases without just cause will just lead to evictions, because we have a vacancy decontrol as state law. So people can just, if they want to raise the rents, they can just evict their tenants and bring new tenants in at a higher rate.
Now, by evict,
without
you mean,
just cause. So that's why they have been linked. But the criticism that landlords have, yeah, that they...
Well, evict, however...
If they have a tenant they don't like,
yeah,
that they may not be able to evict the tenant just because, oh, I don't like you, is not an argument that resonates with me. But it is a legitimate criticism.
Well, I think the point they were making was it's not just an eviction. Eviction is when you know, a person isn't paying their rent or they're violating the terms of their lease. For some reason, you want to get them out of there and they won't leave. That's an eviction. Terminating their lease means, you know, you've only agreed to do it on a month-to-month basis. Your month is up. I don't want you anymore. Whether you want to be here or not, it's not the same thing as an eviction. That's their point. Is there a distinction between an eviction and a termination of a lease?
Well, legally, yes. In practice, I don't believe so. I mean, I've never had a lease terminated. I've never had a lease. I've rented for 30 years almost in this town, and I've never had a lease. It's been month to month since the first.
Well, I use the term.
The experience is exactly the same.
I use the term month to month to also include a lease. In other words, there's an implicit contract that when your month is over, your lease for that month is up. That's what I mean. In other words, is an eviction during the month? And you're right, your right to protection from such an eviction, the same thing as your right to protection from the termination of the lease at the end of the month. You follow what I mean?
Yeah, I do. But I think it's a semantic argument that is being made there, because the reality is the law says landlords can evict without any cause for whatever reason, 30 days, or in the case of tenants who have been living on a property month to month or with a lease, whatever it is, for more than 2 years, 60 days. Mm-hmm. So that is just the law of the land, no matter what your contractual arrangement is with a landlord. Between a tenant and landlord.
Right, but the law is changed first by the city's emergency ordinance, and then if the initiative passes in November, which I hope it will, by this new ordinance that will state that there are only a following number of specific causes that will allow you to A, evict, or B, terminate a lease. Is there a difference in practice there that you can see? In other words, not just in terms of what, you know, the fact that it can be done, but the argument by the homeowners that this somehow is different. I mean, should homeowners be able to continue require them, once they've taken on a tenant, to keep that tenant forever, provided they keep paying the rent, but provided they're in the 22% bracket and they don't violate the other limited conditions. Well, I'm not sure how limited they are. Are you handily familiar with what those conditions are? Because I'm not, but they're...
I mean, they're primarily, you know, violation of the law,
mm-hmm.
non-payment of
rent,
you know, some, and I don't know exactly I don't know all of the details, but, you know, related to damages, you know, so destroying a destruction of property, mm-hmm. or, you know, making it subject to code violations, health and safety and other code violations. So, you know, non-maintenance of a property or, I mean, not really non-maintenance because that's the landlord's responsibility, but, you know, destruction of property. So those are kind of the big ones. And so I think that that's reason. I mean, I think those are reasonable, personally. You know, and to landlords, I say, and I'd like to say it, when they're actually listening, hopefully some of them are listening now.
Maybe.
Or when this airs, I say, you know, if you're worried about not liking the person that you're renting to and you live with them, then rent to somebody else in the first place. You know, I mean, I understand things come up, you know, disputes arise, but renters don't have the privilege of being able to say, oh, I just really don't like my landlord, so I guess I'm going to go find a new one. You know?
That's a good point. That's a good point. Let me turn.
We are going to hold off on the rest of this interview to keep you all hanging on until Sunday, when we're going to be back with more of this and more other stuff too. Who knows? We've got a lot of stuff coming up. Let's take a musical break and then a little bit more before we say goodnight.
Mammary glands, whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's very delight. You can't make cream of butter cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight. Do you want to pay to take a peek at what drives men insane? Well, they're in Anthrobooks galore, and I'm too sure that you'll adore them. Hey, women have the same two simple mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's dairy delight. You can't make cream of butter cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight. The men decided that a certain shape stands out more than the rest. Well, they made such a major issue, women stuffed their brows with tissue, their shoulders back to look their best, show off their mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's dairy delight. You can't make cream of butter cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian So don't be shy, they'll pay. Oh, once you finally sold out, you may get a centerfold out. A digger dug you up away with famous mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's dairy delight. You can't make cream of butter cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight. It's a multi-million dollar enterprise, but no one knows what it's about. Before we buy it, we bust the myth, we would defy it. We might stand up and shout, they're only mammary glands. Whoa, whoa, Mother Nature's dairy delight. You can't make cream of butter cause it's just a human udder, a natural mammalian sight, a natural mammalian sight.
And that was Kristen Lem's Mammary Glands from her album, Oh Mama. Again, about 30 years old, but, well, there are still mammary glands walking around. I can vouch for that, though not represent it. So we're going to round out the show with about 15 minutes of an interview with Salinas activist Wes White. It's the first part of a longer interview, which like the Sandy Brown interview and then the audio from the Red Church from last Monday, I'm going to finish on Sunday. And plus, hopefully, pack lots of more stuff, throw it your way, and hope you like it.
All right, well, today is March 10th, day before daylight savings goes on again. And I'm talking with the homeless savings guy, Wes White, over maybe in Salinas. So, hi, Wes.
Yeah, I'm still in Salinas. How are you doing?
And, Wes, we spoke last night about a number of things. You sounded not as happy as you might be, but also you were talking about a number of things. You, of course, are with the give me the appropriate names, the organizations that people should review if they wanted to get updates online about what you're up to.
Let's see. I guess I'm part of the Salinas Homeless Union. We have a Facebook page, Monterey County Homeless Advocates. And it went up to this Poor People's Campaign strategy meeting it's a national campaign. It's called for a moral revival. Reverend Barber from South Carolina, I think he was a big guy on NAACP, and he started this Moral Mondays thing where every Monday they were doing some kind of protest action, impactful, I think. And it pushed a lot of change, and so I guess this moral revival is calling for all the states. There's at least half of them involved. California is one of them. It's mainly Sacramento-centric, but, you know, that's kind of how things are going to happen.
The Poor People's Campaign was, of course, begun back in 1968 under Martin Luther King, Jesse Jackson. It involved, I guess, they were going to truck to Washington in the spirit of, I don't know, the bonus campaign of, I don't know, was it the 30s? I keep mixing up the 30s and the 1890s when large numbers of vets came to Washington to demand, some kind of decent treatment for, I guess they saw it as veterans, but, you know, for other people saw it as ordinary folks. What's on the agenda this time as far as you found from your meeting recently?
I think they're going to start doing something in May after Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And still waiting to see exactly what that's going to look like and how that's going to impact. But they have been to the Capitol a couple of times, making some noise. And, you know, it's definitely on the right path. So...
Well, I understand before, in 1968, there was an aborted Poor People's Campaign that took place after King got shot, after he was assassinated, where they were there for a little while, but then they left. It was sort of a trek to Washington followed by an encampment, but then they kind of went away. What's the plan this time?
That is a good question. I do not know.
Huh. And I know you said that your attorney associate, Anthony Prince, who's certainly talks a lot of fire, and he's done some real work in fighting the Salinas camping ordinances, the earlier ones, and presumably now is helping Marysville activists, Brian and Ray Lynn up there, try to get somewhere with their handcrafted lawsuit, which... looks like it came out of a backyard of a prison. I mean, it's like they wrote it out longhand, and they had individual homeless people sign it. I think there were 100 signatures of people who had lost property or been forced to move from nowhere or from somewhere to nowhere. I don't know how good the somewhere was. Similar to what's happening in Santa Cruz, and I guess what's been happening in Salinas and out there on Lapis Road. What's up with Prince these days? What's he doing, if anything? He doesn't answer my calls, so I don't know what he's doing. I may just catch him at a busy moment. I'm not necessarily saying that he doesn't love me anymore. I mean, that would be, impossible. I'm so lovable, so.
As lovable as a cactus or a porcupine.
Oh, thank you, yes. And I try to be a prickly now and then, but not a prick, difference.
There you go.
But he's an articulate attorney who also doesn't, he
Like many of us, he likes to give stump speeches, but he also seems to put in hard work, and I like what his speeches say. What do you see him doing recently? And what's is that? Yeah, let me just leave it there.
I think he's been mainly involved with that Poor People's Campaign for a while. Right before that, he was doing a lot with renter eviction law. And, you know, so I think it's a calling for him. He's had it for decades, you know. But, yeah, how much impact can you really make? And that's what's being doled out. I mean, you know, they're definitely... We're connected, and that is something national is really hard to say, you know? And they're actually putting in a lot of effort doing that. And they're putting the Poor People's Campaign agenda forward, which is the same thing, you know, whatever Democrats and progressives, this is a lot more real and a lot more to the point.
What's the agenda? Let's get specific. What are we talking about?
Gosh, now that I can't really sell the product nearly as well as you can find it online or something, so I can't really, you know, that's for the stump speech part of it that you're asking for there.
Well, I'm just looking for the substance in all the organizational flurry. I mean, what the particular demands are that, you know, that are being put forth. And I haven't looked up Poor People's Campaign, so maybe I could do that, but I... Insofar as you do talk about it a bit, I would encourage you in the next time we talk to, you know, if you have more specifics, that's always helpful. I mean, I'm always into the local specifics, trying to get them, because I regard that as being something that you can not only keep a closer eye on, but that you can also actually mobilize real people around immediately. And you don't have, you know, you don't get the national networks or any of that shit, but you might get some local changes, or at least the push toward a local change and local education. And I know you've been involved with that a lot, with the different, you know, encampments in front of City Hall, speeches in front of Board of Supervisors and City Councils. And I guess you were saying recently that you actually encouraged, helped the employment opportunities for a number of police officers who were... called to remove you from a room. You want to tell me about your adventures with the, you know, the police?
Oh, joy. Well, I thought you might get a kick out of it. I went down to this Greenfield School District board meeting. It doesn't really get recorded. You know, it doesn't have its own technology for it anyway. They're completely behind the times. And they like it that way. So they relegate media, if you want to record it, to the very back. So if you're sitting down and you pull out your cell phone, they will tell you to go to the very back of the room. And they also don't like leaving their mics on, which is another interesting point. Or at least they don't like talking into it. And there's another one I can think of that does that too at the Board of Supervisors.
Let me interrupt you here by asking you, what drew you to this meeting in the first place, and what were the issues they were discussing that, you know, we might be interested in?
Okay, yeah, definitely. And that I wasn't trying to overshadow either. So the Department of Pesticide Regulation was going to ban chlorpyrifos, which is a dangerous chemical cancer-causing, and, you know, they spray it on all the fields everywhere, near schools and everything else. So, you know, that you end up with kids sick, you end up with teachers sick, you end up with pregnant mothers sick. You know, it's just a bad cycle. People die from this, and so they were asking for a mild buffer zone resolution that the school district would try to compel their neighbors, or immediate agriculture neighbors, to in fact admit if they're going to spray this, give us at least 3 or 4 day notice, and you know, that way we can close the windows and maybe not show up that day or something, make sure it's on the weekend. Of course, it hampers the farmer's ability to farm the way they want to farm, if it or not it affects other people. And, you know, that's it. It was going to be on there. It was going to be banned by the EPA. And then, of course, Trump came in. So none of that stuff happened. Everything's been rolled back. And this was actually a unanimous decision to accept the resolution and try to ask all their immediate neighbors to
How strong was the resolution, and was there an alternate, stronger resolution that was rejected either behind the scenes or explicitly?
So some of this would be crafted by Safe Ag, Safe Schools, which is a statewide effort to include these pesticide things. So they've been going after the DPR for quite a while, and have helped with the resolution authoring it. So the best avenue was, they were good experts. So we packed it with Safe Ag, Safe School members, and of course we only got a 20-minute limit of public comment, and they did it all out of whack too. So,
who is
there's so much weirdness.
Oh, Wes, who is we? What you say? It sounds like a group organized. What was the group that organized?
It's called Safe Ag, Safe Schools.
Uh-huh. And this town you went to, you say is Greenfield. That's a small community south of Salinas, is that right?
Yes, just south of Salinas, maybe 25, 30 miles.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's on Highway 101 as you head south, right?
Yes.
And how large is that community?
That's a good question. Maybe...
I don't know is a good
30,
answer.
30,000, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't either. I think it's small. I know that they have a road that leads from Greenfield to the coast. It's kind of a twisty, windy, kind of fun road. I've taken it years ago. But I don't know much about the people there or their agriculture, what they do, and, what they're,
Well, it's very windy and arid, so you do end up with dust quite often. And, but yet there's still agriculture all around because of irrigation. And it does get really hot. So it's not the best of climates, but it is livable, especially if you're indoors with air conditioning.
A lot of ICE activity by the the immigration Gestapo, or not much?
In Greenfield specifically, I am not sure. I know there have been raids up and down the valley.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the specific numbers.
So this was a sort of an organized visit to the Greenfield School District Board, you say? That's what we're talking about?
Yes, sir. Okay, so this agenda item that was passed unanimously in praise and everything, there's a little bit of backstory because we did try to get it on the agenda a couple months ago, and it was rejected outright, as in, not being placed on the agenda, and so it got removed from the agenda. And then it got, by another board trustee, I can't remember her name either, but, another board member tried to put it on the agenda. It got squashed the first time. She tried to put it back on, and they said, well, fine, we'll do it without a presentation. And then we kind of forced a presentation, but then it didn't actually happen. It was supposed to be an actual agenda item. That's why I mean they took it out of turn, out of whack, which also stressed my position as well, because this whole story started with this whatever antic stuff. Well, all I wanted to do was just video people's faces. I didn't want to video the back of their head. I wanted to see the sign that they had and video their face. That's not too much to ask. Well, they wouldn't let it. They said, no, your place is in the back. And I said, guess what? Well, when this meeting starts and the public's up there, I'm going to be standing over there on the side. So, whatever you need to do, you can go ahead and call the cops if you feel like it.
And how many people were, Wes, how many people were in the room when this happened?
Oh, wow. A good 50, 60 people.
And was there other media present?
No other media present.
And were they recording this? Presumably, it might be required by, I would imagine it might be required by state law, but, usually...
I don't think state law requires any kind of recording, although the public would require it. I think state law just requires for the Brown Act that you record some kind of minutes.
Hmm. Is that right? Yeah. Who knows? You could be right. I mean, I've seen it done with such regularity here in Santa Cruz, admittedly I think they've had recordings ever since I began attending council meetings back in the late 80s here in Santa Cruz. But this is a larger community, and, it has progressive pretensions and so forth. So
yes, pretensions. I like that word.
Oh yeah, big time. They got the mask, very nice. They're trying to print the details on it.
Really, that's pretty much all we have time for on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm going to be back with the conclusion of Wes White's interview, as well as Sandy Brown's interview and Adventures at the Red Church, and more stuff, too, plus lots of tidbits here and there. That's going to be Sunday starting at 9:30 in the morning on Free Radio at 101.3 FM. If you have questions or comments, you can call in between now and then at 423-4833. That's 4833, in case I didn't get that one out to you. And you can hear this show archived and lots of other shows archived on the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org. Check it out under Lost Shows. And we're not really lost, but we lost contact with our show archiver, and we have to do it there. But huffsantacruz.org, Lost Shows. So we're going to go out on another song by Kristen Lems from Oh Mama called The 50s Sound. And that's going to be it for tonight. Thanks for listening in, and keep your eyes and ears open and your cameras and cell phones at the ready. Thanks.
Put on my Bobby socks and run to the gym. The 50s band has gotten them out on the floor. Hey, wait. I've been through this nightmare before. Those olden days were not so golden, you know. Girls who got in trouble, they had nowhere to go. Couldn't take their lives into their own hands. Spent their time a swooning over rock and roll bands. Those days, colored people knew their place. Didn't try to barge into the human race. But Elvis and the others picked up all their cues and made a million dollars singing wild boy blues. Wow, 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 wow. They're dancing to what oppressed us 20 years ago. The '60s in. Everybody looked and thought and talked the same and learned all of the details of the dating game. Boys, they were letter men or else they were queer. If they were small or shy, they lived in constant fear. Wah, wah.
Wah, 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 wah. She ran away.
They're dancing to what oppressed us 20 years ago.
Who missed the 50th song? The millionaires whose profits have been going down. For the Ku Klux Klan, those were the good old days. And back then, women really knew their place. Administrators missed the days when students obeyed. Didn't meddle in the world the grown-ups had made. The Pentagon's nostalgic for the days of yore, when every kid would rush to join their latest war.
Don't. So all you kids soaking up the sea, sorry to break.
And that was actually 40 years ago, or maybe even 50 years ago, I guess, maybe 60 years ago. And the years just keep passing by. Next up on Free Radio, I think we're going to be listening to Uncle Dennis, or a reasonable facsimile thereof. So don't go away.
Hey, give me little of the grades and pass me a Rizla. All right then, strictly highest of the highest, and not that me a feature. All right then, circle a ring G to seal them and flanker. All right yo, this a officer, nobody arrest me for that one, yo. Yo, because me no want no cane, no want no coke. I set a grade, so you got to promote. I mean no want no cigarette in my lungs for choke. Don't make me talk, me no in on no joke. We want no slap, purpose drunk and in the car. Why you think me blazing up the chalice and the country fat? Drive so far, go country fat, me float just like a dungeon fat. Plant Mr. Farmer Man, plant Mr. Farmer Man. Yeah, who do stop it from me, swear me, reap me profit. Them a traffic, cut it, lock it, one fish stop me in a traffic. Officer. Why you treat the trees a rabbit? It's not like we a rabbit. Father grow it naturally if we go have it. Give me little of the grapes and pass me a Rizla. All right then. Strictly highest of the highest and not that me a preacher. All right then. Circle a ring G to seal them and flanker. All right yo. Mr. Officer, nobody arrest me for that one, yo. Yo, no cause me no want no cane, no want no coke. I set a grade, so you got to promote. I mean no want no cigarette in my lungs for choke. Don't make me talk, me no in on a joke. Them a grades that want me bone, it make me high. Me knowledge and me wisdom increase, I multiply. It give me vision to me third eye. It circulate to me body, cure new moon and then it purge eye. Me never give it up, me never let it go. The best from the west, me no matter about the south. No, no matter how them chop it out. Another crap I grow, we are gonna reap without a doubt. I said, give me little of the grapes and pass me a Rizla. Alright then, strictly highest of the highest, and not that me a feature. Alright then, circle a ring G to seal them and flanker. Alright yo, Mr. Officer, nobody arrest me for that one, yo. Yo, hey, I tell. On the west, me a travel from Angel up to center. Food for the brain, feel a vibe, make we meditate. Hey, me no want no cane, no want no coke. I just set a grade, so you got me from out. I mean, no want no cigarette in my lungs for chow. Don't make me talk, me no in on no joke. We want no slap, grab a skunk and in the car. Why you think me blazing up the chalice and the country fat? Drive so far, go country fat, me float just like a dungeon fat. Plant Mr. Farmer Man, plant Mr. Farmer Man. Yeah, who do stop it from me, swear me, reap me profit. Them a traffic, cut it, lock it, one fish stop me in a traffic. Officer, why you treat the trees of rabbit? It's not like we a rabbit, father grow it naturally if we go have it. Yeah.
God have mercy, ay. Good God have grace, ay. Lord have mercy, ay. Perlina build up my confidence. Rastafari run the continent. This King Selassie, I pay the consequence. Don't get it confused. God, give me a bottle of Perlina. Come make me mix up the rouge with Medina. Come off a tour and me need feel weak. So me go a up road and go link viva. What good for your nerves, so what's up and support. A coconut water fi wash off your heart. Hey, nobody could have said Rasta soft. Me go link viva fast and never fever. Hey, Sperlina, we blending so you know why. Be spending every dollar out on me billfold. Bowl. Hey, a buckle of the green and I eat make me clean. So me skill like Alan still cold. If you not get it, you will lose. Make your food be your medicine, your food. Blend up the carrot with the lettuce in a juice. No free eggs, me mix the vegetable with the fruits. Lord, give me a buckle of Sperlina. I make me mix up the roots with Medina. Come off a tour and me need feel weak. So me go a whoop road and go link fever. Hey, give me a bottle of spirulina. Come make me mix
up the route with Medina. Me brother Teflon Van, give me a niece. We drive go a warp road, go link fever. Me a want you to take my body serious. I know anything can go in a me teacup. Me live like a king like niggas negus. Caesar drink rum till him body seize up. But me go link fever, him say him got it right here. One bottle of spirulina and a cut a right here. I'm not like weed, this that I'm the worst nightmare. I know give me anything, no give me red stripe here. Just give me a bottle of spirulina. I make me mix up the roots with Medina. Come on, cut